Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The Homance Chronicles.
The female equivalent of a bromance.
So many poor choices.
But so many good takes.
But so many poor choices. This is the Homance Chronicles, and I'm Sarah.
And I'm Nicole. And I did my Hoe of History research yesterday.
Okay.
I know. I planned on doing it on Saturday and I did not. I got a massage on Saturday and then was like, I'm just not going to do anything.
No. I woke up with the world's worst migraine on Saturday.
And
it led me down the do nothing path for the entirety of the day.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much was on the do nothing path other than the massage and the Hoe of History, but I didn't even want to turn on my computer.
I don't blame you. It's a process.
And I was actually feeling really good about myself last week in that I was feeling on top of things. And then I had like a rare, obscure light bulb burnout in my bathroom, like light chandelier thing. And I was like, God damn it, life. Why can't you ever just let me just be like, okay, everything's checked off the list. I'm good. I'm done. Like, no, now I have to hunt down some random light bulb. And it was just funny. It was like, oh, okay. I guess I'm just not going to do anything. Fuck it. The light bulb burns out in the bathroom. And I'm like, I don't even know what this is. I had to find
your hands up. Ugh.
I had to find the original like paperwork that came with the light fixture to figure out what kind of bulb it was. And I went to the hardware store today and they had very similar ones, but not the wattage that I needed. So
can you Google it? Like what is happening?
I did. I found it. And of course on Amazon, you have to buy a pack of like 600. I technically only need one, but I'll probably buy three since it's a three bulb light fixture. But it's interesting how you justify like, okay, well then never mind. I'm just not going to do anything. You know what? I thought I was good on life.
No, that's how my brain operates.
I thought I was good. And then weird, obscure light bulb burns out.
That ruins my day.
Okay. And you're like, you know what? Just never mind. Mm-hmm. You know what? I have tomorrow.
That's tomorrow me's problem. Future Sarah's gonna hate me.
So yeah, I kind of lumped everything into that's a tomorrow problem. So I thankfully did though give myself enough time to do the research for this Hoe of History because there was a lot of information. A lot of information.
Right. Okay, what did you do?
I did Billie Holiday.
Oh, that's a good one. Billie!
Yes.
Billie with a Y.
Nope. I-E.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We had another Billie Holiday.
Well, we didn't. But there probably is a male version of a Billie Holiday with a Y. But I have not done, or we have not done a story on another Billie Holiday. I don't know. I looked at her list and she spoke to me and I was like, oh, I think I have the time to give her what she deserves because she actually has an autobiography. Actually, I think there's a couple of them and there's a movie about her. So there's a lot of information. Whereas, you know, when we pick some of these women from like the 1800s, it's a little sparse. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to dedicate as much time. Mm-hmm. So with that, I will get started.
All right.
So Billie Holiday was born Eleonora Fagan on April 7th, 1915 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So she was an American jazz and swing music singer. She was nicknamed Lady Day by her friend and music partner, Lester Young. She had an innovative influence on jazz music and just like pop singing. Her vocal style was really unique and was strongly inspired by jazz. So she pioneered a new way of like manipulating phrasing and tempo. So she's definitely known for her vocal delivery and improv skills.
I appreciate you pushing through that one.
Yeah. I mean, before I did any research at all, I went and looked at an old video recording of her that I found on YouTube and pretty much within seconds had goosebumps. You know, yeah, she had one of those voices that just touched your soul, right?
She had so much fucking talent. It is insane.
Yeah. So I admittedly was like, do I even know a song by her? Like, I know who she is. I'm like, but do I even really know any of her music? So then I just went and like quickly listened to a few of the popular ones. And
survey says,
well, I totally understood why people would say that she had a unique like voice styling, because she was kind of talking. She was almost poetic in a way.
It was almost, yeah, she never had like, I think back to like that era of music and everybody was kind of sing-songy and it was really rhyming with the beat and there was always like that, you know, break and whatever it was, you could guess it based on the patterns of the music. She kind of went beyond that.
She was very much like a storyteller, in my opinion. And I'll talk about that a little bit more. So her parents were an unwed teenage couple and her last name Fagan comes from her mom. Actually, her dad's last name was Holiday, but it was spelled H-A-L-L-I-D-A. And so he switched it to the traditional spelling of Holiday, H-O-L-I-D-A, for performance purposes, because he was also a jazz musician. And however, her birth certificate lists her name as Eleanor Harris.
Okay, and I have to ask if race had something to do with any of this.
If race did? Mm-hmm. I don't think so. It was more the fact that her parents weren't married, weren't together. Her grandparents, so her mom's parents, like, kicked her out of the house for being pregnant and stuff. And so I'm not sure where Harris came from, but it popped up a few times. And her mom, at some points her last name was listed as Harris. I don't know. And then what I found was that also her first name initially was Eleonora, and then it was later listed as Eleanor. I don't know what was going on with her birth name. I truly do not. It was even conflicting in some articles, like where they were flipping between them. And so anyway, we're going to call her Billy. So her mom moved to Philadelphia at 19 years old because her parents kicked her out. And this is where it gets like a little confusing. So her mom ends up in Baltimore, where her married half sister lived.
Okay. Married half sister. Okay.
Yes. And so this would be Billy's aunt and uncle. So her dad basically abandoned them and to pursue like his career in jazz as like a banjo player.
Wait, what year was this?
When her mom or when her dad abandoned them?
No, like when, what year was Billie Holiday born?
1915.
Okay.
So her mom, though, within 5 years, marries a man named Philip Gough, and like G-O-U-G-H.
Like Van Gogh?
Yes. And so at one point in time, Billy had his last name, but it seems like it was never legally changed anywhere. Then that marriage only lasted 2 years. So at some point, Billy was like, fuck all this, and just decided to use her father's performing last name, Holiday, and named herself Billy after her favorite movie actress, Billy Dove.
Again, just making those lifelong decisions at such a young age.
Correct. Yes.
You know what? Done with the shit. I'm Billie Holiday now.
Don't right. At me. Right. Call me Eleonora, Eleanor, Fagan, Harris, Go, Holiday. Like, all she was like, done. Just never mind. I'm going to pick my own name. So Billie's mom didn't seem very present in her childhood because she had to work all the time. And so Billie was actually raised by her aunt's mother-in-law. So that's her uncle's mom.
Jesus.
Yeah. Right.
Wow. So, that's so much weird math.
I know. Trust me. As I was trying to write this, I'm like, how do I write this where I can say it out loud and it makes sense? So a lot of her like childhood details are a little inconsistent, in case you haven't noticed. And even in her autobiography, Lady Sings the Blues, they're inconsistent because, spoiler alert, Billy was on a lot of drugs. So
wouldn't she be?
So the thing that is consistent, though, across all of the sources that I read is the theme of like a troubled, unstable, unsupportive lifestyle, like just full on life of struggle. And just no true upbringing, right? It's just kind of like no survival structure. Mode. And so Billy's 9 years old, and she would actually end up skipping school so much that she was taken to a juvenile court. And so she was sent to House of the Good Shepherd. It's a Catholic reform school. And she spent 9 months there and then was, quote unquote, paroled back to her mother.
Oh, my.
For like good behavior.
Scared straight, bitches.
But not really, because she didn't ever go back to school. So somehow her mother opened a restaurant. And I don't know where she got the funds or the wherewithal to do this, but it was called the East Side Grill. And so Billy and her mom would both work there for really long hours. And it resulted in Billy dropping out of school at 11. So
okay. That checks out.
On trend with all of our other stories, where about 10-ish is when they decide what they're going to do with their lives.
Yep, 100% checks out. Fuck all this. And I'm Billie Holiday.
And I'm 11 and I'm not going to school anymore.
I know all the things I need to know.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, though, because Billy was not in a traditional schedule. Or, I mean, I don't know, I guess this could have happened either way, but it just seems like she was probably alone a lot. So her mom came home one day and actually caught a neighbor trying to rape Billy. So thankfully, Billy fought back and the neighbor was arrested. But that put Billy in the house of the Good Shepherd, the Catholic Reform School, again. Except for this time, it's under protective custody because she was a state witness in a rape case.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
That's so conflicting. Conflicting vibes. I don't, but okay. But I don't.
So then she's, again, like using these terms, she's released in 1927, around 12 years old. So naturally, she goes to work. She finds a job running errands in a brothel and is a maid in neighborhood homes. So then,
unreal.
Yeah, a year later, her mom moved to Harlem without her, left Billy with her aunt slash mom's half sister and the mother-in-law for about a year. So I'm guessing it was about a year based on me putting this story together. I don't know that for sure, but approximately a year later, Billy joins her mom in New York and started auditioning at jazz clubs. So she's like 12, 13, something like that. 13, 14,
like
maybe.
I wonder, like, does her voice at that point, is it the mature voice or is it the kid voice that can sing really well?
Well, I guess she used to listen to a lot of music by Bessie Smith and like Louis Armstrong. So she might have been playing up a more mature voice.
Probably.
Just based on like her influences.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like there's style to be had too, but you know, when little kids sing on like, you know, whatever those shows are.
Yeah, it's always like high pitched, and
yeah, you can tell that person is young.
Right. So, I mean, she had no like formal music training, right? So she just went with her instinctive sense of like what musical structure and singing style is supposed to be. So to her, it was supposed to be deeply moving and individualistic. So she's rocking and rolling under the name Billy and fully adopted Holiday as her last name during this time. She teams up with a neighbor who played the tenor saxophone, and the two of them would go play clubs from 1929 to 1931.
Okay.
And so she never learned how to read music, but she was just super active in the jazz scene during the Harlem Renaissance era. And she happened to be in the scene as it was also kind of transitioning into the swing era. So she took influences to develop her own style, and then also connected with her father during this period, because he was playing in Fletcher Henderson's band, and Fletcher Henderson was like one of the most prolific Black musical arrangers, and he played a large part in the development of big band jazz and swing music.
So like she probably hadn't spoken to or connected with her father previously, right? It was just
happenstance. Yes.
Oh man, could you imagine that guy being like, hey, what, who are you? You're my kid.
I mean, he might have been like, oh, hey, but for the most part, she was self-sufficient. So he probably just treated her like an adult or a peer.
I was going to say, he probably just ignored the whole dad fact and was like, yeah, hey, partner.
Right? Yeah.
Looks like you're doing good. Good stuff.
Right? So in 1932, she's 17. She replaced the singer Monette Moore at Coven's Club in New York. And there was a producer, his name's John Hammond. He went to the club to see Monette Moore. But so he ended up hearing Billy instead because Billy replaced her. So he is the first person who gave her an opportunity to actually record a couple of songs. So by the age of 18, she's recording commercial songs. She was paired with Benny Goodman, and one of her first releases was a top 10 hit in 1934, and it was called Riffin' the Scotch.
How old was she at this point again?
1934, she would have been 19.
Not even old enough to rip the scotch.
Oh, here we go though.
Cause what? It's been 20. When was it like that law established? Like the drinking law? It's around that era, right? I'm looking it up. You can keep going.
Yeah. I thought it was more a Depression era, but around there, yes. 34 is pretty close to that time frame. But she was, by 19, she was already super familiar with alcohol from being in clubs since she was like 13. So she actually did know what it meant to riff the scotch. Yeah, because like from her early teens, she would use marijuana and alcohol for good times.
I mean, who doesn't, right?
She was living it up in those clubs. And she was truly unconcerned about her indulgences after her singing career or how they affected her singing career. She just kind of was like, I'm going to do me.
I don't blame her.
And so, unfortunately, though, it did make her a little bit more disconnected. And she ended up splitting up from that record producer, John Hammond, who actually gave her her shot. Like, things went awry, I think, because she probably was not doing what she was supposed to be doing.
More than likely.
So then in 1935, which, I mean, I don't know, is that Prohibition era?
So I'm looking it up. And like, it looks like, for instance, Alabama started in 1881, but Alaska doesn't. And Arkansas started in 1925. So it's really kind of all over the map. It depends on how the state looked at it first.
Gotcha.
But a majority of them, I'm making the grand assumption here. Let me see if I can't find New York really quick. I'm making the grand assumption here that New York was likely the leader in early ages due to just popularity. And so it was before 1896, it was 16. After 1896, it was 18.
The legal drinking age. You're not talking about prohibition.
Correct. And then once prohibition hit, pretty much everybody was like, yeah, maybe we should. Like some states identified if it was a beer with an alcohol content of 3.2%, you could be 18. But if it was stronger than that, you had to be 21. So it's kind of all over the map. But it looks like the late 1800s is when they started to act on drinking ages. Who knew?
So in 1935 to like 1941, is when her career really accelerated, and she was starting to record like hit after hit, right? And
all fucked up too, right?
Yeah, at this point she's having a good time. I don't know if she's fully addicted yet. So in 1936 is when she began like a legendary string of collaborations with Lester Young, and he was a tenor sax giant, and so he had a very complimentary tone that went really well with her voice, and they became like the best of friends. They're inseparable. They're legendary musical partners. He even lived with Billy's mother for some time.
Dang, she was still in the picture.
Oh yeah, her mother stays in the picture the whole time.
Oh, they damned.
So Lester is the one who famously called her Lady Day, and she would call him the Prez. And so
I mentioned him initially already.
Huh?
I can appreciate their relationship already.
Yeah. I mentioned him initially when I was doing the introduction because I guess a lot of people know her nickname as Lady Day, but I did not. So by the time that Billy joined Kansas City's Count Basie Orchestra, she was going to do tours with them. Or I guess she did do tours with them. I'm putting the cart before the horse here. she did tours with them in 1937, and she was like top billing across the United States, just like unstoppable force, just making money. And then a year later, Artie Shaw invited her in front of his orchestra, making her the first Black woman to work with a white band.
Oh, yeah, Billy.
Yeah, so that's an impressive and courageous accomplishment. However, promoters kind of objected it. And they flat out were just because of her race and her unique vocal style. So she ended up leaving the orchestra out of frustration. She said in 1938, she was asked to use the service elevator at the Lincoln Hotel in New York City instead of the one used by the hotel guests because white patrons of the hotel complained. So
wow.
That was like the straw that broke the camel's back for her. So she left the band, and a few weeks later, she spoke about the incident saying, quote, "I was never allowed to visit the bar or the dining room, as did other members of the band. I was made to leave and enter through the kitchen."
The star of the show, basically, is.
Yes.
It's just so fucked up.
Yeah. And there's no actual surviving live recordings of when she was actually with the band.
She probably had them all fucking destroyed.
So, now a year later, we're in 1939, and she's introduced to Buddy Tate. And so he was actually a saxophonist from Count Basie's band, the one that she was in. and they begin to date. So
white guy.
No, he was Black.
Oh, okay.
She was the first Black woman to like lead the orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
But he was I'm pretty sure he was a Black man. I believe all her husbands were Black.
Just trying to picture if he would have had to go through the segregation like she did or not.
Oh, I'm not sure. So they became an item, but then he quickly realized how much alcohol and marijuana she was doing, and he basically told her, "You can't get high all the time, not every day."
Oh yeah, she chose.
So then that didn't last.
Oh, that's funny.
She ended up striking out on her own and performed at New York's Cafe Society. So that's where she kind of developed her trademark stage persona, and she would wear gardenias in her hair and sing with her head tilted back. So this was when she was introduced to the poem Strange Fruit. Now, Strange Fruit was the first video that I watched where I said, like, almost immediately I'm getting goosebumps, because when you listen to the words, it's about lynching. And so the strange fruit is referring to actual Black people hanging from trees.
Ugh, I got chill bumps and I haven't even listened.
Yes. So she, like I said, she kind of speaks the song Like it is based on a poem. It does sound a little bit more poetic. So you get a vivid picture. And so the music for this was written for Billy, and it became a hallmark of one of all of her concerts, I should say. And it's considered by scholars to be the first protest song of the civil rights era. And the lyrics were so controversial that her record label wouldn't actually record it. So she left her record label and went over to an independent record label called Commodore Records, where she could record it and sing it how she wanted to. And then Strange Fruit became like a cultural hit record and kind of talking point, but there were a lot of radio stations that wouldn't even play it. But, you know, as soon as something's banned, people have even more interest in it. So she performed it at a club in 1939, with knowing that she might get some retaliation. And when she would perform it, she would do it in a very dramatic way. Cause she was like, well, if I'm going to go out here and like put myself out here and potentially like face scrutiny or whatever, she was going to make an impact. So for her performance of Strange Fruit at the Cafe Society, she had the waiters silence the crowd when the song began. And then during the song's long introduction, she had the lights dimmed and all movement had to stop. And then as she started singing, there would be a small spotlight that like would just shine on her face only. On the final note, the lights would go out. And then when the lights came back on, Billy would be gone.
Performance.
Yes.
More goosebumps.
Yes. So she later said that the imagery of the song reminded her of her father's death and that it played a role in her resistance to performing it. So her father was denied medical treatment for a fatal lung disorder because of racial prejudice.
Unreal.
So she felt like singing Strange Fruit kind of reminded her of the incident. So
I don't, yeah, that's, I mean, I'm frustrated. It's frustrating.
Yeah.
Cause it's
so like, then after singing her song, Strange Fruit, she received a warning from the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, which is obviously a government agency. And it's lasted from 1930 to 1968. She received warning to never sing the song again. And of course, Billy refused and kept singing the song anyway.
What does the narcotics group have to do with her singing that song?
Because she was on drugs. And so that was their way of trying to, you know, stop it. Basically, okay. The FBN commissioner, Harry Anslinger, believed that Billy was a symbol of everything that America had to be afraid of.
Oh,
he was a known racist.
Of course. Of course.
So it was like his way of trying to like control the narrative. And since she was always linked to being high and on drugs and stuff, he was trying to send a warning to her, even though obviously the Federal Bureau of Narcotics shouldn't have anything to do with a song.
Exactly. That's where I'm like confused.
Yeah. So actually on one of the YouTube videos that I watched, there was a comment and it was from @Casey5693. And they said, Billie Holiday was a badass. She was threatened by Harry Anslinger, the head of the FBN, to stop singing about lynching. She did it anyway and continued to do it no matter what the monster tried to do to ruin her life. Now Holiday and Strange Fruit are still remembered. Anslinger is not. I pray one day to be as brave as Billy was.
Hell yeah. I pray to be one day as brave as Billy was.
I just found, I was like, that comment's only from 3 years ago.
Hell yeah. I'm sure so, you can find something to this day.
Oh, sure. I'm just, I mean, it's obviously these recordings are really old and they've been, you know, remastered or owned by certain groups. And so who knows how long the videos have been out there, but thankfully there's people like this person who continue to kind of keep the spirit alive. So then, Johann Hari wrote a book called Chasing the Scream, and it was about the first and last days of the war on drugs, and told WNYC, which I think is now maybe WCBS, either way, told the media in New York, quote, talking about Billy, quote, she had a heroin addiction because she'd been chronically raped as a child, and she was trying to deal with the grief and the pain of that. And also she was resisting white supremacy. And when she insisted on continuing on her right as an American citizen to sing Strange Fruit, Anslinger resolves to destroy her. And, end quote. So Anslinger, like I said, was widely known racist and made it his mission to take down Billy and for her drug and alcohol addiction, and relentlessly pursued her all the way up until her death in 1959.
Okay, what a nuisance.
Right?
Just like a constant fucking mosquito in my ear. Get out. Move. Go away.
I know.
Do something else.
I know. Isn't it wild?
I want to find his ancestors and piss them off.
Like, who has the time?
He did. That was his only
Are you supposed
job.
To be doing something else, sir?
No. No. He is. That is his job. I fucking wish I had one job to do all the time and could hyper focus like that. It's insane.
So Billy's popularity increased after Strange Fruit for obvious reasons. She received mention in Time magazine, and she said, I opened Cafe Society as an unknown. So Billy is calling herself an unknown when she started there. And then she said, I left 2 years later as a star. I needed the prestige and the publicity. All right. But you can't pay rent with it. So then she soon demanded a raise from her manager.
Don't blame her.
And so then Billy's mom, who's still hanging out in the background, somehow opens another restaurant. I think the first restaurant had closed.
Okay.
And now she's opening up another restaurant, which is a new one, and it's called Mom Holidays.
Okay. Capitalizing on Billy. Got it.
Yes. So she used Billy's money that Billy won while playing dice with the members of the Count Basie band. So that's how Billy made most of her money before Strange Fruit. I mean, but she was top billing. She was top billing like in a lot of areas, but again, it didn't last that long. You know, she left right. because she was, you know, a victim of racial prejudice. So, she said, Billy said that it kept mom busy and happy and stopped her from worrying and watching over me. So she was like, here, have my money and go keep yourself busy.
Do something with yourself.
However, her mom began borrowing large amounts of money. And Billy felt obliged, but then soon fell on hard times herself. So she said that one night she needed some money, and so she knew her mom would have some. She thought for sure she would. So she walked into the restaurant acting like a stockholder in the restaurant and asked for money, and her mom turned her down flat.
No,
she said her mom would not give her a cent.
I would have killed her.
And so the two argued, and then Billy apparently shouted, quote, God bless the child that's got his own. And so she stormed out, and then not long after was working with a pianist and wrote a song based on the lyric, God bless the child. And the song, God Bless the Child, became Billy's most popular and covered record. Yeah.
Damn. Always got to be trauma.
right? It reached number 25 on the charts in 1941 and was third in Billboard's Songs of the Year, selling over a million records.
Wow.
That's so literal funny. Fuck you, mom.
Yeah, no shit. On all the airwaves, get fucked.
And then actually in 1976, many, many years later, like three decades later, the song was added to the Grammy Hall of Fame. And so now it's part of the Great American Songbook and Jazz Lexicon. So it lives on forever.
I love this.
Good old fuck you.
Big fat fuck you, mama.
In 1944, she signed with the prestigious Decca Records. She recorded more classics and duets and even worked with her musical hero, Louis Armstrong. And they ended up actually being in a film together called New Orleans later on. Meanwhile, in the background of all her, you know, popularity from Strange Fruit and these money troubles and blah, 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 she married a small time drug dealer. Yeah. So her choices in men are not great. So Jimmy Monroe was a small-time drug dealer, which eventually led to Billy gravitating towards opium to get high versus just marijuana. Mm. So, you know, things escalated.
Mm-hmm.
And
have always been around. They just have been in different fucking formats this entire time.
Well, yeah, I mean, around 1943, 44 is when heroin began to like fill a void because there was a shortage of opium from the war.
Mm-hmm.
So she would use heroin sometimes when she couldn't get opium. So the heroin is what ultimately led to her having major addiction issues. Well, and she would spend tons of money like indulging on drugs for herself and for her former drug runner. His name was Joe Guy. He was also happened to be a trumpeter. And she sparked up a relationship with him like he was her boyfriend while she was married.
Oh boy, she was really in it, huh?
Yeah.
She was a true Hollywood star.
So then her mom dies in 1945 and Billy begins drinking more heavily.
But fuck that bitch. Why?
Billy? Yeah. So her drug use escalates to ease her grief. I mean, this woman, you think that I'm talking about somebody who's like in their 60s. No, she's 32. So, yeah.
I feel like it's not normal. But if you look at today's society, it's very, very similar to what we have going on, like today. Like all these people are so traumatized by like in their 30s, they're done. They don't want to do it anymore.
When they're young stars, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a different lifestyle. You're not given the opportunity to make mistakes. You're under a spotlight and you're hanging around a bunch of people who are a lot older than you and in environments that aren't suitable for a supportive system. I mean, you live a lot of life when you're a young star.
Right.
So in 1947, she's 32, and her manager is also Louis Armstrong's manager. And her manager decided to protect Louis from a drug bust. So he cooperated with law enforcement agencies to have Billy busted instead.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So she was arrested for narcotics possession and it makes like the national news and everything. She's sentenced to 1 year and a day of jail time. She went to the federal rehabilitation facility in Alderson, West Virginia. So the drug possession conviction causes her to lose her New York City cabaret card. So that prevents her from being able to work anywhere that alcohol is sold. So she still was able to perform in some like concert venues and theaters, though, in like 10 days after she was released from jail or the rehabilitation facility. She packed Carnegie Hall.
Rightfully so.
So Billy was also able to play in New York's Club Ebony, which the club owner's name was John Levy. And John Levy then became her boyfriend and manager by the end of the 1940s. So, I mean, just another one of the guys who kind of like took advantage of her / not a great influence.
She's still married?
At some point she gets divorced. So she got divorced from the small time drug dealer husband in 1947.
Then went to jail.
Which aligns with when she went to jail.
Okay.
So she may have been divorced when this Levy guy became her boyfriend.
Okay.
So it was only a year later after her release, though, that she was arrested for possession by federal narcotics agents. I mean, we know he's coming for her, right? She actually ended up being acquitted that time, though, of the charges based on technicality.
Oh, that's good.
So supposedly she's divorced. She had broke up with her other boyfriend, Joe Guy. And I don't know. I mean, during this time that she's in jail or the rehabilitation center or whatever, it's a little murky. Like, all over the internet, it says that her and Joe Guy, who was the boyfriend, the first boyfriend, I should say, it says that they were married from 1951 to 1957. So there must have been like some sort of rekindling or reconnection or something. But I couldn't find anything about how like they got back together or how the marriage happened. I don't know.
I don't know.
So then in 1956, she's 41. She's arrested again with Louis McKay for narcotics. And when her and Louis are arrested together, 1 year later, they also get married. So she gets divorced from Joe Guy, boyfriend, and then turns around within a year and marries this other guy, Louis McKay. They're all drug related.
100%.
I mean,
once you start doing heroin, there's really no coming back to just like reasoning.
Right. So she had three husbands.
In 3 years.
No, not in 3 years. Over a span of a while.
I'm just kidding. 4 years.
And a couple of boyfriends that we talked about. So in total, there's about five guys. And the only one that seemed like was halfway decent for her was the original one, Tate, who told her, like, you can't be doing drugs every day like this,
mm-hmm.
you know, but that one didn't last. After that, they were all connected to drugs somehow.
Yeah, that's not surprising. And Tate was, in fact, a black man.
Okay. So she continued to perform in concerts and clubs outside of New York City and actually did do several tours in her like later years. However, it was a constant struggle with her heroin addiction because it completely ravaged her voice.
Well, I imagine so.
Her technique was still there, but her voice was a problem.
Whitney, anybody?
Right. Whitney. So, despite all the trouble that she had with her voice, she managed to give a pretty impressive performance on television, broadcasts for the Sound of Jazz. So I don't know. I guess she pulled it out when she had to. She gave her final performance in New York City in 1959. It was not long after that event, though, that Billie was admitted to the hospital for heart and liver problems. She was diagnosed with cirrhosis of the liver. She was also addicted to heroin that she was, again, she was even arrested for possession while in the hospital. Yes, I know. Unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah. On July 17th, 1959, Billie died from alcohol and drug-related complications at the age of 44. She is considered one of the best jazz vocalists of all time. Billie has been an influence on many other performers who have followed in her footsteps, and her autobiography was made into the 1972 film Lady Sings the Blues, and Diana Ross played the part of Billie, which kind of helped renew interest in Billie's songs. And then in 2000, Billie was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and Diana Ross handled the honors for that. And then in 2021, just 2 years ago, Andra Day portrayed Billie in the biopic, The United States versus Billie Holiday. Because when she was arrested initially and went to court for possession, it was the United States versus Billie Holiday, because it was the Federal Narcotics Bureau.
FNB. FNB doesn't exist anymore, right?
No. No, it does not.
It's just so fucking wild.
Or is it the Federal Bureau of Narcotics? Whatever. FBN, FB, whatever. It doesn't exist anymore.
The point is, they don't exist.
So my sources were BillieHoliday.com, Wikipedia, Britannica, Biography.com, JazzWise.com, and CheatSheet.com.
Very cool.
I had to use cheat sheet because I was like, wait, how many times was she married? Who was she linked with? What? It was getting a little confusing.
Very funny.
So that's the story of Billie Holiday.
Well, thank you for sharing Miss Billie's story.
Yeah, go listen to Strange Fruit and get goosebumps.
Yeah, I read the lyrics while you were telling me about them, and fuck.
It's yeah,
aggressive. No wonder they tried to get her to stop singing it, because it doesn't hold back.
No, it very vividly depicts a picture of
Black people being hung in the sun.
Yeah, of Black people hanging from trees as if they're fruit. Mm-hmm.
Deplorable. Humanity is deplorable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ugh. Yeah, I mean, I just had no idea of what I was digging into when I started researching her.
I didn't know that she had so much trauma, and she was actively addicting, or she was in active addiction for the last part of her career in life.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, I feel like she is... I feel like her and Amy Winehouse kind of have a similar.
Yeah. And Amy Winehouse came up as like another person to research. And for some reason yesterday when I was doing this, Amy Winehouse was trending.
Oh, so that's fun.
I added her to our list. But Amy Winehouse is one of the ones that died at 27, along with like Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix. Like there's a whole slew of them that for whatever reason die at 27.
Right. It's a curse.
And what's his face from Nirvana, I think, was 27.
Yep.
So, yeah, Billie made it to 44.
Yeah. I mean, it's very remarkable how similar their stories are, though.
Right.
Looking and hearing about Billie. Man, so much to process.
I know, her story is intense. I told you, I did not know what I was digging into when I was like, okay, I'm going to do Billie Holiday.
I just knew it was going to take a lot, and I needed like more than a couple hours to do Billie. So I hadn't dove in. I'm like, I'm glad I didn't try. I always feel like when we're done with these kinds of stories, you know how when you're done with a series, like a TV series, and you just ruminate on what the fuck you just watched and how the whole thing, like that's the mode I'm in now after listening to that story. Like, God damn it.
I know, this shit's heavy.
I'm going to go make food, I think, now and just eat it.
And count your blessings.
And not watch TV. Just
stare off into the abyss. Huh? Yeah.
Things could be wildly different.
Yeah. Tell Seth all about it.
Oh, he'll get it. He always gets it from me after I come upstairs. I'm like, so we did so-and-so this week and it's insane. Can you believe? And like the Madame Tussauds story, he just looked at me. He's like, wow. And I'm like, you don't care, do you? He's like, no, I do, but I got nothing. Wow.
Oh my God. He didn't even say he didn't know that she was a real person.
No, I don't know if he didn't really divulge, but you know, I also did like, I was randomly talking at him while he was trying to watch his Formula One stuff. So it's very possible he was just like, uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah. But yeah. I encourage everyone to go check out a song or two just to truly understand her vocal styling, because I can't really put it to words.
And then, so looking at her pictures, how old was she when she passed? 44?
Yeah.
She ages so quickly.
Yeah.
Knowing her story, I didn't realize. I thought she was like maybe in her 60s when she passed, per the pictures I've seen over my lifetime.
Yeah. Yeah, is true. That is true. A lot of her pictures are with her and her dog.
Yeah.
And I didn't include anything about the dog in here, but there was like a brief little story about how her and the dog met, and the dog looks super vicious, but he just like ran up to her and was like licking her and hugging her and cuddling her, and somebody thought that she was getting attacked, but she wasn't, and I don't know. And so her dog was along for the ride for a lot of this.
I was gonna say, it looks like her dog was like very
his name was Mister.
Oh, adorable. I have a feeling Mr. had been around for and he's even in, let's see, it looks like there's even some like artistic portrayal of him on.
Yeah, if you go to like BillieHoliday.com, it's like the main picture up on the homepage of her and her dog, because I guess he was just like by her side all the time.
Yeah. It looks like there may have been an artistic interpretation on an album cover or something. And there's tons of pictures of her and her dog in the dress room. I love it. This is Mister. He ain't fucking with you. He's fucking with me, and he coming with me.
But he looks like a pit bull mixed with something like a.
He just looks like
a pointer or something. I don't know. Anyway. It's time for Atta Girls. So if you have one, feel free to start. Atta Girls are our pats on the back, or like our positive reinforcement. We always like to end the show with something good that happened to us or something good that we did.
Yes. So I actually have. I got up on Sunday and decided I needed to do all sorts of things. And so I cleaned up my basement and I went out into the garden and did some major garden revamps. Some of my beans died because of some fungal disease, and I had worms in my broccoli, and my cucumbers needed to be fenced up, you know, things. So I did them all with Google and just gut feelings behind my side. And it looks like things are still actually growing and shall continue to do so. So that's my Atta Girl. Like, I have a garden I did on my own from seeds, and things are starting to grow, and like little bits of fruit are starting to come through. Like, you know, the flowers are flowering now, and I'm like, this might actually happen. I'd actually be able to grow myself some food.
Yeah, it's just the irony of that it's in nature, but you have to keep nature out.
Oh God, you know, let me tell you what, I was not prepared for, because, you know, I'm not trying to use pesticides and shit. That's the other thing I should add to grow myself. I'm doing all organic, like, growing here. I'm not doing all that crazy pesticide shit. I'm not using Miracle-Gro. I'm not using any sort of anything like that. I'm just trying to do it based off of what I eat in my kitchen, you know what I mean? Or use to clean or whatever, like baking soda, vinegar type shit. So I'm impressed that I've made it this far without anything really fucking failing, aside from the beans, which I actually think that was root rot, if I'm going to be honest, because it's been raining so heavily. So that's where I'm at. So yeah, I'm like proud of myself, because all the stuff in my garden is like non-GMO seeds and all that shit. So it's organic, non-GMO, grown in my garden with, you know, manure from a local farm and soil from local farm and compost dirt from my own fucking composter.
Well, yeah, I don't think that you can get any more farm to table than that.
No, I don't think we could either, unless I had chickums.
Well, good for you and your broccoli.
I've looked into maybe 2 chickens. I've really, really considered it. Like,
Don't do it.
Well, I've got a good score right now for like locally sourced eggs. So I'm not, that would be the only reason. But so yeah.
Chickens are a lot of work.
Oh yeah. I have gone down that rabbit hole several times. And genuinely, I would really like to just cut out this whole having a job shit and live off the land.
Okay. All right. Well, surprisingly, chicken feed is like insanely expensive.
Oh, I can tell you that I have gone down that rabbit hole, and the conspiracy theory is pointing towards Bill Gates. I got all sorts of dumb information in my dome now, because I just keep going. I keep reading shit because everything is so unfucking believable at this point. I can tell you it all started.
Everything is connected to a cult.
Yes, and it's called the World Economic Forum.
But
you know, the worst part, it all started with, I was looking up chickens, and then the, you know, current affairs were pointing towards chickens were not producing because they were eating this one type of feed, and this one type of feed is channeled back to Bill Gates somehow. Like, it all comes back down to, it's connected to Bill Gates, and it makes logical sense. That's the fucked up part. I can't say it's a conspiracy theory or if it's truth, because right now it's looking more like truth. And that's scary to me, because I'm not one of those conspiracy theory people. I like logic, factual shit, but it's weird. I do all my own research, and it's just, it comes up wild.
I just watch a lot of people on TikTok or Instagram reels who have kind of farms, right?
Yeah.
Like, I watch one where it's like, called Useless Farm. Yeah, and I watch Matt Matthews, who has, you know, Fluffy, his chicken. Yeah. Well, I mean, he has a bunch of chickens, but like the amount of work and effort and everything. Well, one really funny thing he said is like, people leave comments saying like, I'm gonna get chickens now, because they like watch him with his chickens. That's, and he's like, I don't think you understand how ghetto it is here.
That's exactly it. It's not easy. It's difficult work.
Well, he was talking about the chicken fights.
Yeah, that's
the other thing. Have you ever seen chickens fight? It's ghetto up in here.
That's amazing. Because it's true. They're territorial. You can't leave roosters in while they're... There's all sorts of rules that go along with it. And then you got to fucking make sure that every night they go in their little home, so there's no fucking predator that...
Yeah, he's got one that likes to fight him because... he wants to take the egg, but she doesn't want to take the egg. And he's like, you already don't pay attention to your other chicks.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. He's like, how did you?
What, and then one day he finally does like lift her up and there's nothing underneath her.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I know. I'm just saying, like, it's just, so I started gardening and that's where I'm at. Just many want for those things. And the way I justify it in my brain is like, oh, if you bought yourself chickens and you had chickens and then you could have your own eggs, then you wouldn't need to make as much money because you're making your, and then I get into this like vicious cycle in my brain of like, yeah, this will totally work. We should totally do this. I don't need to actually do any of this. It's not no. what I really want.
No, you can't have a full-time job and do chickens.
No, I would. I'm really genuinely trying to figure out how I can nix the full-time job and make that just surviving.
Oh, Lord.
And if I can survive off of creating my own and then bartering, I'm really thinking it's possible anymore. Based on what I've seen so far.
Yeah. You're ready to head back to the Oregon Trail.
Fuck it. If I only have to worry about whatever dysentery and yellow fever, fine.
I'd always end up with like a bull sick or a wheel broken in that game.
Yeah. Dysentery. Yeah. And then also that other bullshit. I feel like I have like a quick, I could figure it out on the fly type mentality. I feel like I could do all right. I would survive. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just not built for this shit anymore.
Oh, man.
I'm tired.
Life. Yeah. Right. I know. I was telling you before we started recording, this is my atta girl. I spent a solid hour and a half on the phone getting insurance stuff figured out. I recently switched insurances and turns out that I thought I was picking the one that would be the lesser of the problematic versions, I guess. But there's these things called prior authorizations that you need for your prescriptions.
I know.
And
too much about those, being a professional sick person, having to have my infusions every 3 weeks. I got you covered on those. You just let me know what you need help with to get
I got it all figured out.
Oh, good.
It's just that, you know, you got to call the insurance company.
People.
Yeah, you never know which prompt you're supposed to pick, but if you don't pick a prompt, you don't end up anywhere.
Right, then you just hit zero a bunch.
And then you just float around, and then I got hung up on accident. Like, it's not like they were like, oh, I'm angry. It was just like, it's so weird because they ask you for your phone number and email in case you get disconnected, so you think they're going to call you back.
Right, no, they don't.
And then when you get disconnected, they do not call you back. So then you have to call back yourself and then start the process all over with a different person.
Yeah. Re-explain it because they didn't capture it in the notes on your account. Or if they did, the notes didn't make any fucking sense to the person that was talking to you now. So like, reiterate.
Yeah. And I still don't have my questions answered. I'm waiting on a call back that probably won't happen.
Right. Right. Exactly.
But I made progress. So, atta girl.
Little things, girlfriend. Little things.
It was crazy. I woke up with the determination to just get it done today. So,
yeah.
You know how some days you're more motivated than others?
Yeah. And I wish, you know, I have that motivation for different things at different times, but it's never for the stuff I absolutely have to be doing. That's the fucking worst.
Yeah. Well, I've got a doctor appointment on next Tuesday, so like in a week, and so I was like, I gotta get this situated,
sorted out. Yeah,
because a week in healthcare time is not enough.
Absolutely not. A week in healthcare time is like, well, it depends on how you're.
It's like it's like you're giving them a day's notice when it's a week's notice.
Right. I was gonna say, it depends on how you're looking at it. If you need something, it takes months. If you need something, if they need something, they needed it 2 days ago. So
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So yeah, if you liked what you heard today, please rate, review, subscribe. We'd love for you to share this with your friends. It would mean a lot to us too.
Your mamas and your daddies.
Right. Share with anyone. It would mean a lot to us to get this Hose of History segment rolling. And you can actually request Manifesting. A Hoe of History by going to our Instagram at homance_chronicles and commenting or DMing us. You can also email us homancepodcast@gmail.com. And if you feel like being entertained by not Hoes of History, by other hoe activity, you can go to Facebook, and then we have a closed group, the Homance Chronicles, a judgment-free zone.
Homance out.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.